Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, August 25th, 2020. We will begin on the front page with the headline, Spike Continues. McLean County reports record case number for third day. This is by Lenore Sabota and Kevin Barlow. People in their late teens and 20s continue to make up the majority of newly confirmed cases of COVID-19 in McLean County, which reported a single-day record increase for the third consecutive day on Monday. Administrator Jessica McKnight reported 99 new cases on Monday morning. The new caseload includes 35 people who are either 18 or 19 years old and 55 who are in their 20s. Over 40,500 tests have been resulted for a cumulative positivity rate of 2.8%, McKnight said. The rolling 7-day positivity continues to increase and is closer to the 8% warning level at 7.3 through Sunday. The news came as Illinois State University on Monday said that 273 cases of coronavirus had been confirmed through on-campus testing since August 17th when classes began. There were 1,496 tests administered during that time, the university said. Illinois Wesleyan University also confirmed 11 new positive cases in the past 3 days among students who initially tested negative when they arrived on campus. That brings to 40 the total number of IWU students testing positive, 10 during baseline testing, and 30 during subsequent testing for community spread. Of those, all but 2 live off campus. The total number of confirmed cases in McLean County is now 1,143, according to McKnight. At this time, 403 individuals are isolating at home, and 4 are currently hospitalized. There are 720 individuals who have recovered and 16 who have died. Of the new cases reported Monday, 2 are between the ages of 1 and 9, 1 is between the ages of 10 and 17, and 1 each in their 30s, 40s, 60s, and 70s. 2 residents are in their 50s. There were 53 newly reported cases on Saturday and 98 on Sunday. Elsewhere in central Illinois, LaSalle County reported 2 additional deaths related to the coronavirus, a woman in her 80s and a woman in her 100s. The county has had a total of 41 deaths related to COVID-19. It reported 25 new cases Monday, bringing its total in LaSalle County since the start of the pandemic to 1,119. Results reported by ISU included symptomatic testing at Student Health Services, asymptomatic student testing, and athlete testing. About 3/4 of those testing positive live off campus, according to ISU spokesman Eric Jolm. There are currently 24 individuals in isolation spaces in on-campus housing. Meals and snacks are delivered to those in isolation or quarantine spaces, he said. The university announced in early August that it would shift as many possible classes online to prevent the spread of coronavirus. Lines grew throughout the day at the testing spot for asymptomatic students on the ISU quad on Monday, despite the warm temperatures, with waits of an hour reported on social media. 2 friends who were among those waiting for testing said the increase in cases has them concerned. "I'm actually going home for a few days because the spike over the past week really freaked me out," said freshman Juliana Severino, an elementary education major from Schaumburg. "I feel a lot safer at home than here." Lily Yukana, freshman in special education from Morton Grove, agreed the situation has gotten scarier. "We decided once a week we're going to get tested. We've been staying in our dorm, trying to stay in as much as possible," she said. Levester Johnson, vice president for student affairs, said via Twitter that testing tents would be moved to a shaded area starting tomorrow. A data dashboard was added to ISU's COVID-19 page on its website on Monday afternoon. It includes numbers of test results received, positive test results, and the 7-day positivity rate. Go to coronavirus.ilstu.edu and click on View Data Dashboard. Asked whether ISU expected to see cases go so high so soon, Joan replied, "With the situation with COVID, one thing we've learned from the beginning is things can change very quickly. It's a concern, definitely. We're watching it very closely." At Illinois Wesleyan, all 11 of the new cases are connected to an outbreak involving students attending off-campus gatherings where consistent use of masks and social distancing did not occur, IWU said. "What we're seeing now is the ripple effect," Carla Carney Hall, Vice President of Student Affairs and Dean of Students, said on Monday. "These are students who were not at the parties but were roommates or otherwise had close contact with those who were," she said. "We have the right resources so far to support students who can't go home," said Carney Hall. Steve Fast, a spokesman for Heartland Community College, said they are aware of 4 Heartland students who have tested positive. He said only one of those had any contact on campus, and it was before fall semester began in an area not open to the public at the time. "The area was deep cleaned before it was opened for use," said Fast. Tazewell County reported Monday that it had 76 new cases over the previous 3 days, 37 on Saturday, 17 on Sunday, and 22 on Monday. 14 people are hospitalized with COVID-19. 470 are in home isolation, and 466 are considered recovered, officials said. The county has had 9 coronavirus-related deaths. Livingston County said 9 more residents had tested positive between Saturday and Monday. A total of 172 cases of the virus have been confirmed in that county. Of those, 149 people have been removed from isolation, 20 cases are active, 2 people are hospitalized, and 3 people have died. Statewide, the 7-day rolling positivity rate fell to 4.2% as of Monday, a decrease of 0.2 of a percentage point since Thursday. From Saturday through Monday, an average of 49,090 test results were reported per day, yielding 1,953 positive results. There were 31 COVID-19-related deaths over the 3-day period, bringing the total casualty count since the pandemic began in Illinois to 7,888. At the end of Sunday, there were 1,529 persons hospitalized with COVID-19, including 334 in intensive care beds and 141 on ventilators. Governor J.B. Pritzker's administration on Monday announced increased restrictions for residents of Will and Kankakee counties as the COVID-19 positivity rate there remained at or above 8% for 3 consecutive days. Bars, restaurants, and gatherings in those counties demarcated as Region 7 in the Restore Illinois plan are facing similar rules to those implemented over the past 5 months by state officials trying to limit the spread of COVID-19. The new restrictions, which will take effect Wednesday, are stricter than ones being enforced in Region 4 or the Metro East area of Illinois along the Missouri border. They do not apply to schools. Establishments serving food and alcohol cannot serve customers indoors, and all outdoor consumption must end at 11 p.m. Patrons must be served at tables placed 6 feet apart in observation of social distancing guidelines. Reservations are required. Employees cannot allow customers to assemble inside or outside while waiting for a table. Alcoholic beverages, or to leave. Bars must remove stools to discourage patrons from congregating. Other rules including limiting social events to 25 people or 1/4 of a space's capacity. Party buses will be banned, and casinos and other gaming establishments must close at 11 p.m. In more local news, we have Council discusses mask ordinance. Some Bloomington members want to get input first from the health department, by Kevin Barlow. Several Bloomington City Council members say they want to hear from the McLean County Health Department before having a discussion about a possible mask ordinance in the city. We have seen some communities taking action on a mask ordinance, and I am not suggesting that is where we are headed, said City Manager Tim Gleason during a Monday night meeting of the council. But the conversation is occurring in this community. This is not something that Corporate Counsel Jeff Juergens and I feel that is something that can be done at my level or the mayor's level with an emergency order. This is something that would have to come back before the council. The council isn't scheduled to meet for 3 weeks, but several members said they would be willing to meet beforehand in a special meeting to discuss a mask ordinance. Mask ordinances have been a hot topic, and it is something that means something different to everybody who hears that term, said Ward 7 Alderman Scott Black. My opinion has been unchanged since the beginning of COVID, and that is that we should do whatever the health department recommends. Gleason said that a meeting is scheduled for noon on Tuesday for leaders of Illinois State University, Illinois Wesleyan University, the Town of Normal, the City of Bloomington, and McLean County with the McLean County Health Department to discuss the rise in COVID-19 cases. In the past 3 days, more than 250 new cases have been reported by the health department. Gleason said local leaders are trying to get the word out. The uptick in numbers prompted the video that was produced with public safety and the mayor late last week, Gleason said, referring to a video in which city officials urged businesses to adhere to public health measures mandated by Governor J.B. Pritzker's administration. Business owners and their staffs and the patrons themselves were asked to comply with the Bloomington Police Department, and the Bloomington Police Department pledged to increase enforcement, he said. I asked Chief Dan Donath what the numbers were for Friday and Saturday. They reported no additional incidents, and in fact, during the routine patrols, the establishments were doing a better job of policing themselves, so that is a positive. In other matters, McLean County voters will be able to cast their vote at the Grossinger Motors Arena in Bloomington on Election Day on November 3rd. There will be no rent charge, but the arena will be available for use as a universal polling place for all McLean County residents. The council also approved a $600,000 contract with Tarleton Corporation for repairs to the Grossinger Motors Arena parking garage and Market Street parking garage. Turning now to some national news, we have from the front page, the U.S. Postal Service leader defends changes. DeJoy links link denies link to 2020 election during congressional hearing. This is by Matthew Daly and Anthony Isaguer with the Associated Press. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy told lawmakers Monday that he warned allies of President Donald Trump that the president's repeated attacks on the legitimacy of mail-in ballots are, quote, not helpful, unquote, but denied that recent changes at the Postal Service are linked to the November elections. DeJoy, who is under intense scrutiny over sweeping policy changes at the U.S. Postal Service, faced new questions on mounting problems at the agency as it prepares to deliver record numbers of ballots this fall as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. During an exchange with Representative Gerald Connolly, Democrat from Virginia, DeJoy first denied having contacted the president's campaign team, but later backtracked, saying he has, quote, spoken to people who are friends of mine that are associated with the campaign, unquote, over Trump's baseless claims that mail voting will lead to fraud. I have put the word around to different people that this is not helpful, DeJoy said during a 6-hour House Oversight Committee meeting. DeJoy faced tense questions from lawmakers over mail delivery delays seen since he took the helm in mid-June. It was his second appearance before Congress in 4 days. I am not engaged in sabotaging the election, DeJoy said, adding that like Trump, he plans to vote by mail. The hearing quickly became a debate over the delivery disruptions being reported nationwide. Democrats said the changes under DeJoy's watch are causing widespread delays, but Republicans dismissed the worries as unfounded and part of a Democratic conspiracy against Trump. The pandemic pushed the Postal Service into a central role in the 2020 elections, with tens of millions of people expected to vote by mail rather than in person. At the same time, Trump acknowledged he withheld emergency aid from the service to make it harder to process mail-in ballots, as his election campaign legally challenges mail voting procedures in key states. DeJoy, a former supply chain CEO and a major donor to Trump and the GOP, set in motion a series of operational changes this summer that delayed mail across the country. He disputed reports that he eliminated overtime for postal workers and said a Postal Service document outlining overtime restrictions was written by a mid-level manager. Last week, DeJoy said that he will halt some of his operational changes, quote, to avoid even the appearance of impact on election mail, unquote. Still, DeJoy vehemently refused to restore decommissioned mail sorting machines and blue collection boxes, saying they are not needed. Also on the front page, we have a Republican convention, election integrity questioned. Trump makes surprise appearance on first day of four-day event. This is by Steve Peoples, Jill Colvin, and Darlene Superville with the Associated Press. President Donald Trump turned a surprise opening day appearance at his party's scaled-down national convention into an opportunity to question the integrity of the fall election, even as his aides promised a diverse and uplifting message once the evening program shifted back to Washington, D.C. for primetime. Trump, who was not scheduled to deliver his keynote convention address until later in the week, nevertheless made public appearances throughout the first day of the four-day convention. While the evening programming was carefully scripted, Trump was not. "The only way they can take this election away from us is if it is a rigged election," Trump told hundreds of Republican delegates gathered in North Carolina, raising anew his unsupported concerns about results, about Americans' expected reliance on mail voting during the pandemic. Experts say mail voting has proven remarkably secure. The GOP convention marks a crucial moment for Trump, a first-term Republican president tasked with reshaping a campaign he is losing by all accounts, at least for now. A deep sense of pessimism has settled over the electorate 10 weeks before Election Day. Just 23% of Americans think the country is heading in the right direction, according to a new poll from the Associated Press-NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. The evening program highlighted in the inherent tension within Trump's Republican Party. His harsh attacks against Democrats who are trying to expand mail voting and demonstrators protesting deaths in police custody, for example, often delight his diehard loyalists. Yet, convention organizers are also featuring a diverse lineup with a more inclusive message designed to expand Trump's political coalition beyond his white working class base. Two of the three coveted final speaking slots on Monday night went to people of color who have been openly critical of Trump in the past. South Carolina Senator Tim Scott and Nikki Haley, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. In between, the schedule called for Donald Trump Jr., the president's eldest son, and one of the GOP's most aggressive political attackers. Like the Democrats, the week before, the program also included a collection of average Americans, a public school teacher from California, a small business owner from Montana, and a nurse practitioner from Virginia. One of several African Americans on the schedule, Georgia State Representative Vernon Jones, was expected to explain why he split from fellow Democrats and announced his support for Trump this year. Some of the planned remarks for the evening program were pre-recorded, while others were to be delivered live from a Washington auditorium. The fact that the Republicans gathered at all stood in contrast to the Democrats, who held an all-virtual convention last week. The Democratic programming, including a well-received roll call video montage featuring diverse officials from across the nation. The Republicans spoke from the ballroom in Charlotte and were overwhelmingly white. Trump complained about spotty coverage of the roll call vote that renominated him as the Republican candidate for president, and some television networks abandoned Trump's informal 54-minute acceptance speech for aggressive fact-checking. This all took place hours before primetime hours that would make clear how Republicans, like Democrats a week earlier, would keep viewers interested with a stripped-down convention because of the coronavirus pandemic. Democrats turned the traditional roll call vote into a well-received television production, with delegates stationed in their home state or territory to proclaim allegiance to Joe Biden. Republicans had 336 delegates, a fraction of the normal amount, support Trump at the Charlotte Convention Center in North Carolina. It was a split-screen moment for news networks, which dipped in and out of the roll call as they also covered the testimony of Postmaster General Louis DeJoy before the House Oversight Committee. In other national news, we have police shooting prompts protests. Wisconsin governor deploys National Guard after night of unrest. This is by Tammy Weber and Maury Gash with the Associated Press. Wisconsin's governor summoned the National Guard for fear of another round of destructive protests Monday after the police shooting of a black man turned Kenosha into the nation's latest flashpoint city in a summer of racial unrest. Democratic Governor Tony Evers said 125 members of the National Guard would be in Kenosha by night with responsibility for, quote, guarding infrastructure and making sure our firefighters and others involved are protected, unquote. County authorities also announced an 8 p.m. curfew. The move came after protesters set cars on fire, smashed windows, and clashed with officers in riot gear on Sunday night over the wounding of 29-year-old Jacob Blake, who was hospitalized in serious condition. In a widely seen cell phone video made by an onlooker, police shot him, apparently in the back, as he leaned into his SUV while his three children sat in the vehicle. Tensions flared anew on Monday after a news conference with Kenosha Mayor John Entarmian, originally to be held in a park, was moved inside the city's public safety building. Hundreds of protesters rushed to the building and a door was snapped off its hinges before police in riot gear pepper sprayed the crowd, which included a photographer from the Associated Press. Police did not say whether Blake was armed or why they opened fire. They released no details on the domestic dispute, and they did not immediately disclose the race of the three officers at the scene. The man who claimed to have made the video, 22-year-old Rayshon White, said that he saw Blake scuffling with the three officers and heard them yell, drop the knife, before the gunfire erupted. He said he did not see a knife in Blake's hands. The governor said he has seen no information to suggest Blake had a knife or other weapon, but that the case is still pending, still being investigated by the state Justice Department. The officers were placed on administrative leave, standard practice in a shooting by police. Authorities released no details about the officers or their service records. Meanwhile, police in Portland used tear gas early Monday to scatter demonstrators who marched on a precinct station in another night of violence, hurling rocks, bottles, commercial-grade fireworks at officers, and setting fires in the street. Similar protests have gripped Oregon's largest city for months after the police killings of George Floyd in Minneapolis. In the National Digest, we have California fire officials are cautiously optimistic after dodging a major lightning storm, but they pleaded with residents on Monday to stay out of evacuation zones and prepare for days away from home as three massive San Francisco Bay Area wildfires rage on, suffocating the region with smoky air. Governor Gavin Newsom said this week will be critical as more than 14,000 firefighters battle 17 major fire complexes, largely in Northern California, where wildfires have surrounded the city of San Francisco on three sides, singeing coastal redwoods that have never been burned. The wildfires, all caused by lightning, have been burning for a week. We are dealing with different climate conditions that are precipitating in fires the likes we haven't seen in modern recorded history, he said on Monday. TikTok sues Trump over planned ban. The video app TikTok on Monday sued the Trump administration over its efforts to ban the popular Chinese-owned service over national security concerns. TikTok, which is owned by China's ByteDance, insisted that it is not a national security threat and that the government acted to, quote, further the president's anti-China political campaign, close quote. The company said the government is acting without evidence for its allegations or due process. It filed suit on Monday in federal court in California against the Commerce Department, President Donald Trump, and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, saying that it sought to prevent the government from impermissibly banning TikTok by overturning President Donald Trump's executive order. Tropical storm Marco began falling apart Monday, easing one threat to the Gulf Coast, but setting the stage for the arrival of Laura as a potentially supercharged Category 3 hurricane with winds topping 110 miles per hour and a storm surge that could swamp entire towns. The two-storm combination could bring a history-making onslaught of wind and coastal flooding from Texas to Alabama, forecasters said. In Russia, tests conducted on Russian dissident Alexei Navalny at a German hospital indicate that he was poisoned, but doctors said Monday he was being treated with an antidote and his life was not in immediate danger. Kellyanne Conway, one of President Donald Trump's most influential and longest-serving advisors, announced on Sunday that she would leave the White House at the end of the month. Conway cited a need to spend time with her four children in a resignation letter she posted on Sunday night. Zoom experienced partial outages during the first day of school for thousands of students who are relying on the video conferencing technology to connect with educators. The company said Monday that it began receiving reports of disruptions around 9 a.m. Eastern Time. It resolved the issue around 11:30 a.m., it reported on its status page. The California Supreme Court on Monday upheld the conviction but overturned the 2005 death sentence for Scott Peterson in the slaying of his pregnant wife and said prosecutors may try again for the same sentence if they wish in the case that attracted worldwide attention. Lacey Peterson, 27, was 8 months pregnant with their unborn son, Connor, when she was killed. And finally, Zhendong Cheng, a NASA researcher and Texas A&M University professor, has been charged with accepting federal grant money while hiding work he was doing for a university established by the Chinese government, as well as his affiliation with Chinese-owned companies. And that concludes the first part of the Pantograph reading for Tuesday, August 25th, 2020. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with part two. Thank you.